Welcome to the Reiki Show, hosted by Bronwyn and Franz Diener of the International House of Reiki. Bronwyn and Franz teach Reiki around the globe and are the authors of the Reiki Sourcebook, the Japanese Art of Reiki, the Reiki Techniques card deck, and the soon-to-be-released A to Z of Reiki. The music you are listening to, Reiki Khan, is available at the International House of Reiki website, www.reiki.net.au.
Hello everybody, it's Franz again.
Hi, and Bronwyn. And today we've got Angie Buxton King with us from the UK. Angie has worked in hospitals in the UK and has written a book called The NHS Healer and holds Healing in Hospitals workshops. Welcome, Angie. Angie, can you tell us a little bit about how you first got into working in hospitals? I understand that you were the first healer to actually be paid for working in the hospitals in the UK.
That's correct, yeah. It came about because of illness within my own family. My youngest son, Sam, was diagnosed with leukemia at age 7. And I already had worked around the peripherals of healing. You know, I'd done a bit of self-development work, and so I knew how to channel energy in a very simple way. So when Sam was diagnosed, it became very obvious that I could at least do that to help him. And that's what we did for the next 3 years, all of which I've written about, as you know, in my book. But then after Sam passed away into spirit, which was after 3 years after he was diagnosed, when actually they said that he would be lucky to live 3 months. So my passion came from the fact that Sam enjoyed such a huge quality of life compared to his peers going through the same difficult time, that I wanted to offer that to other patients within the NHS. So a year after Sam died, I approached Great Ormond Street Hospital, which is a very famous children's hospital, which is where Sam was treated in London, and gave a talk about the benefits of healing alongside conventional medicine. And they listened very politely because they did know us as a family, so I was given that opportunity. But for them, that wasn't the right time for them. But I was on a bit of a roll at this time, so I thought I'd approach the next hospital along the road, which was University College London Hospital. And they already had aromatherapy and reflexology there, so their door was a little bit open, but not a huge amount. And I approached there, told them the same sort of thing, you know, this is how healing can benefit your patients. And they gave me the opportunity to prove a need, really. They said I could have a month. I had 1 day a week. I had a month, so 4 days in total, to show them how healing could work for their patients. So that's how I got in.
Great. And you were doing Reiki at that time?
I'm very hesitant to label healing with any kind of title like that. I know it's important that people go through training disciplines, and Reiki is a very good training discipline. But I also trained in the UK with the National Federation of Spiritual Healers. But before that, I was just working with energy. So I think it's very useful, especially in the 21st century, to have a certificate behind you and to show that you've got a code of practice. But on the other hand, I don't necessarily believe that I'm doing Reiki, spiritual healing, or any other. I'm just being myself, being a channel for energy.
Yeah, absolutely. In the hospitals that you've worked in, you've worked with hematology, I've seen. Any other sort of areas that you've worked specifically with?
Right. Well, when I approached, obviously, Sam's disease being leukemia was a hematology disease. That means cancers of the blood or problems with the blood, whereas oncology is solid tumours. And so I was drawn to hematology, and that was where they had the reflexology and aromatherapy, so that's where I approached. But since then, you know, we're talking 7 years ago now, so I proved the need. I then went on to be offered 1 full day a week paid from the NHS after a month. Following year it was 2, following year it was 3. And then we had a bit of a reshuffle in our complementary therapy team, because complementary therapy has come a long way in certain places in the UK, and especially within cancer. And so it was growing all the time. And so my line manager, who's the head nurse for cancer in University College Hospital, his name's Stephen Rowley, he decided that we needed a manager. So we all interviewed for the post, and I got the manager post. And that was quite a big shift forward for me, because it took me a little bit away from my therapy, but it did allow me to go off to conferences and talk about my therapy and therefore spread it. So it was a good opportunity. And so it also has given us the opportunity to become much more integrated in the hospital. So we drew up protocols and policies for each of the complementary therapies that we were offering there, as well as an umbrella policy, so that we, you know, when you start to have policies, you start to become more integrated into the health system. Otherwise, you may be just a nice little cute add-on. And for me, the goal is to become integrated so that the patients are being offered this alongside conventional medicine right from their diagnosis. So we got the policies and protocols all lined up. And then that meant that we could spread into other areas. So we are, you know, funding is definitely a problem. And there is only a certain amount of money in the NHS, but there is money if people and managers want to be creative. And so our manager wanted to be creative and felt that we should spread into oncology, which is solid tumours, as I've just said. So our first push was to put it into children's oncology, and we managed to do that about 3 years ago. So my husband, Graham, works with the children. He does call himself a Reiki master, and his discipline is definitely Reiki. And he works with children with solid tumours from 0 to 13. And we've just had another push forward into teenage cancers, so that's leukemia and oncology as well. So we're spreading slowly but surely throughout cancer services, and that's really where the most need is within our trust. Of course, there is need in every area of the trust, but being realistic, in the NHS, there's more money in cancer services. And the reason for being keen on being paid for your post is not about anything other than you become integrated if you are paid for your post. We're in a playground that people respect each other if they are professionals, and to be professional they expect to pay you, and so it all comes down to a big loop.
Talking about being professional, what kind of terminology do you use when you talk about healing, particularly with doctors or nurses? Do you use kind of the terms like spiritual healing or energy stuff or whatever we might call it, or do you kind of use more medical terms?
No, it's a good point that you raise, because part of our role, all of us therapists, we all, and this is part of being integrated, we are all expected to teach to the new nurses when they come on the unit, and we also have a three-monthly gig, as it were, with the medics. So, you know, the system here in Great Britain, I don't know what it's like in Australia, is that you have new doctors coming onto the unit every 6 months. And they have to be integrated into the fact that there is a complementary therapy team there. So in the sort of induction into the whole unit, we are part of that. So we'll teach our therapy to them, only in a very surface way. We've got an hour to do it. So the way that I've always done it is to talk about the fact that this therapy that we have on the ward can be called lots of things. You may hear it being called Reiki, you may hear it being called spiritual healing, or in America it's very popular to be called therapeutic touch. That's what I say to them. But I said the one thing that all of these titles have in common, in my opinion, is the tool of energy. And then I do a little spiel about, you know, well, clearly we all have physical bodies, but around us is an energy field which we can demonstrate by using certain photography techniques. And that this, it's this energy field that becomes out of balance, and that I, as a healer, or any healer, channels energy through their bodies and into that energy field. And when that energy field is balanced, then you can get a very positive effect on the physical body. And they all look at you as if you've flown off the planet. But it is sort of but it is sort of accepted by them. And then the best way of actually following that teaching up is to give them a session. And most of them will have a session. And then all this talk about energy makes sense to them, because then they can feel, what they can definitely feel is energy running through their bodies. And so somehow the words, as long as you keep them simple, and then if you give them a little blast of energy, that seems to solidify it. But most importantly, again, of course, is the patient experience. So if the patients are feeding back to them that actually their stomachache went away after a visit from the healer, then that's all they need to know. They don't need to know any more than that, unless they're interested to need more than that.
Yeah. You were talking about touch for health, spiritual healing, and Reiki. Often a lot of people say Reiki is very different than spiritual healing. Personally, for me, it's very similar, actually the same. We just use maybe different tools. What is your opinion about working with Reiki or spiritual healing?
Exactly as you said. That's my opinion too. But it's not my opinion, it's my feeling. Because, you know, as I say, you know, I didn't have a certificate in anything when I first started working with healing. Then I did Reiki, and then I did spiritual healing. And for me, the energy didn't seem to change at all. The way of applying the energy does, of course, depending on who you go to as a teacher. You know, Reiki in this country is very much taught as a hands-on therapy. Spiritual healing is taught as a hands-off. So for me, I am a great skeptic at heart, and I always like to feel for myself, and more importantly, let the patients feel how it feels for them when they feed back to me. So I have a technique where I work down the body on the physical body in the hospital and privately, and then when I come up the body, I'm working off the body. So if there is a difference, I like to think that I'm embracing both of those differences and those nuances within my technique.
I'd be interested in knowing what training the actual practitioners have who you're working with. Do you make sure that the practitioners have a similar training? Do you take anyone who's interested? Is there a standard? How does that work?
Yeah, it works. Yes, there are many, you know, the two that we're talking about in the UK, the ones we've mentioned, are sort of, they're just two disciplines. But there are many, many, many schools of energy healing within the UK. But you have to stop somewhere. And there are two reasons why we have chosen the two that we have chosen. And that is that our protocols in the hospital say that you have to be a National Fed of Spiritual Healer with 2 years post-certificate experience, or you have to be a Reiki Master with 2 years post-certificate experience. Now, the reason we've laid down those two disciplines is that, of course, A, I'm familiar with them, and B, there are a lot of very etheric-type schools of healing. And we're talking about bringing healing into a medical environment. So the only people we want to work in our hospitals are the ones that are very grounded, the ones that can use simple, basic language, and the ones that don't get a bit too airy-fairy and start waving their hands about in the air. I'm sorry to be a bit sort of practical about it, but that's basically what we need from professional healers working in the NHS.
And how do you ensure that that's the case?
Well, we have a strict induction process, so we actually sort of just employed another healer. We've got three healers now in the trust, and we had 80 applicants for just a one-day-a-week job. And it's easy to, of course, go through. I mean, you might be throwing the baby out with the bathwater, but you've got to have some protocols somewhere. And so if they haven't got the qualifications that we're looking for, they don't even get interviewed. And then once we've got, we were down to about 12 people after that. And the 12 people then were all interviewed, and we asked them to explain their therapy to us as if they were talking to a patient. And you can certainly pick out the people who are going to be able to use the language that we're comfortable with from that kind of technique. But we also ask them to have had some experience within cancer care and to have volunteered somewhere. And if they hold all of those essential ingredients, there were two people left that actually then fulfilled our criteria. And it was very difficult to choose between the two. So there you go, that's life.
Yeah. You talked about being grounded. Can you explain a little bit for our listeners, what do you mean with grounded? And why do you find it so important in a hospital setting?
Right. What I mean by being grounded is that what do I mean? Well, I believe myself to be a grounded person. That means that I don't believe anything that I haven't felt for myself. That even if I do have amazing spiritual experiences, I always remember that I'm actually here on Earth and that it's no good to me to be wafting around in this cerebral space that is all floaty and talking about angels, which may or may not exist. You know, no offense to anyone who believes in angels. I'm sort of sitting on the fence on that one because I haven't actually seen an angel. But if I, so for me it's about a way of living. Do they go home and have a normal life, or do they continue to live in this quite sort of spacey place? I'm not being very articulate, but you know a grounded person when you see them. And then you know somebody, like for instance, some of the applicants said to me in their induction sort of letter that they believed that they had spirit guides working with them and that they spirit guides could cure cancer. That to me is not a grounded person. We're talking about something that we have to make real and practical within the NHS. And so we can only talk about it in terms of energy and how it might help the physical body. So you can have and hold all of these spiritual beliefs. I have some quite wacky beliefs, I suppose, really. You can have and hold those, but you don't walk about pontificating and being evangelical about those beliefs. They are yours and yours alone, and you don't have to be evangelical about sharing those beliefs.
Yeah, excellent.
Yeah, I think so too. If you look at any kind of traditional healing, like, for example, in China or even in India or in Japan, a lot of those teachers never really go about and standing in the square and talking about, oh, I see the angels, or I see these spirits, or I see these deities. It's all very, very personal. And and it's to see those people as well, as you say, they're very, very grounded. And specifically, if we need to work in a hospital setting, I think that is very important.
I think so too. Because we could certainly spoil it very easily by letting people come and work there that aren't grounded. We only need the wrong person in the wrong environment, and for them to give a patient a treatment. And then, you know, the patients will often, they have the most amazing experiences because they're so very ill. And of course, the energy just goes in very strongly to try and meet that need. And some of them will say at the end of the session, oh, how come, you know, I could feel your hands on my feet, but there were lots of hands on my head and on my chest. And you only need the ungrounded person then to say, oh, that's because that's all my spirit guides that come in and help me with the healing. And for that patient to have suddenly got a whole lot of information that they didn't really need, and you can spoil the whole unit.
Yeah, I think you talked about respect before. You know, you're working with your peers, and you need to be seen as a peer. And in that, then, you need to be respected by the other practitioners that work in the hospital.
Absolutely, yes, and I'm sure you can see that because of our integrated role, we're working in a multidisciplinary team, so we'll be in meetings with consultants and coming right down through the hierarchy to ourselves, which is probably at the bottom of the food chain, which is fine. And, you know, if you started talking about, well, this person took a massive amount of energy into their heart chakra and, you know, you just couldn't use that kind of terminology. And that's where our course that we just created, the Healing in Hospitals course, comes in. It, you know, from our experiences, as in Graham's and my experiences, we know the kind of language that they can accept. And you can help them grow a bit, but you have to be very careful how you help them grow. So to talk about chakras is not okay, but to talk about an emotional release within their chest area, then that's fine. You know, they can grow with that. You know, just the fact that we're talking about the emotions is quite a big growth spurt for some of our doctors, to be honest. The Healing in Hospital course talks about the language, how to approach a hospital, how to be successful in your interview, how to adapt your therapy to be able to take it into a hospital, because, of course, we're working to a protocol, therefore, we're working to a 30-minute treatment, and, you know, how to adapt your therapy when you're giving it to a person who's lying in a hospital bed with lots of intravenous lines going into their body and maybe some oxygen on and various other nurses rushing in and out of the room. So, you know, all of those practical skills are very useful to help us to get healers to go into the NHS.
What sort of modalities, or what practitioners from which modalities do you expect to actually come along to these workshops?
Well, we've just completed our second workshop, so 50 people have gone through now. And the kind of people that come through, you know, they're obviously geared to the UK. So a lot of National Federation of Spiritual Healers, and a lot of what I say they don't like because, you know, that they are a little bit ethereal and they do hold themselves in high esteem. So, you know, to actually come back down and say, well, actually, that's not the best way to approach it, but this might help you to do that better. But, of course, a lot of Reiki practitioners, if there is a difference in the UK, it's because the Reiki tend to be young people coming through. Young people who do expect to actually be able to work in a professional way, whereas in our sort of country here, the National Fed tend to be people who are slightly older in generation, more fixed in their ways, and less able to adapt to a new way of working in the 21st century. So, you know, we're all learning a lot, and I'm learning from them, of course, because they've got a lot to offer me. A couple of people from the College of Psychic Studies, but just the word College of Psychic Studies, they do have their healing modality there, but they're psychic in their way that they heal. And, of course, that doesn't fit very comfortably into the practical world of the NHS. But as long as they learn not to bring that belief system into their work, they're fine. You know, they can heal us because we can all heal. It's a matter of how we heal and the language we use that's important.
Yeah, and how are you encouraging hospitals to take on these people who are doing these great trainings?
Okay, well, that's the big one for us because obviously Sam passed away some 7 years ago now, and we know that we're doing a reasonable job at UCLH, but we want this therapy to spread into other areas. It's no good just being content with what we've got. So on the back of that, we've now created a charity in this country. It's been created as we speak. It'll be set up by the end of next month. It's called the Sam Buxton Sunflower Healing Trust. Sunflower for all the connotations that spirituality has around it, but also because a sunflower does tend to cheer you up when you look at it. And we hope that our healers are definitely going to have a positive effect on the patients they see. And the goals of our charity are to draw funds into it to then place healers into NHS cancer centres around this country. We've got some very important sponsors who are putting on a corporate event in London in September, which will bring the first funds into our charity. And then, of course, there's lots of other, now that we're going to become a charity, there are lots of other areas that we can ask them to give us money, i.e. the lottery has a new branch that gives to charity. And because we're working with public health, hopefully their doors will open to us. So, yeah, we've got our first push in September, and then we'll be putting more healers into UCH because charity begins at home. And then when we've done that, then we hope to be able to say to other trusts, because what we've got at UCLH is a example of excellence, actually, because we're an integrated, unique team working on the ward. We're not outside of the ward, we're inside the ward. We've got protocols, we've got policies. So any interested trust can then say to us, well, could you give us an idea of your policies? And yes, we will. We will share practice. And then most importantly, we'll give them the money for them to employ a healer. So we won't be employing healers, the trust will be employing healers. And as a result of the book about Sam, many, many, many people already in different cancer centres, nurses, have asked me to sort of try and help them to integrate. So I'm already well placed to have seeds, and now we just need the money to actually plant those seeds, and that's what the gig's about.
What a wonderful project. I wish you all the luck with it. That sounds just fantastic, you know, getting more people out there into a healing modality and helping people in hospitals and integrating it with the Western kind of medicine. Fantastic.
Thank you. Yeah, we're really pleased. In fact, the group that are helping us, you've got touring down in Australia at the moment, Deep Purple, which is the old rock group.
I thought that might be who you meant, but I thought that can't be. Oh, my brother would be impressed. Okay.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, so we're really excited about that. And, of course, to have Sam's name on it feels very nice and joyful to me. So I'm happy
with
that.
That's wonderful. Look, there's a little bit extra with that as well. You also have a Healing in Hospitals info pack.
Well, actually, that is almost now redundant because the Healing in Hospitals info pack was something that I put together about 2 years ago. And that's simply a handout to say, you know, this is the kind of questions, these are the kind of questions you need to ask yourself before you even attempt to go into a hospital. Because there are a lot of questions to ask yourself. I mean, a lot of people will have no idea what it's like to work in a hospital and how challenging emotionally it can be. So preparation type questions. Then there was who to approach. That's really important because you can spend a lot of time talking to the wrong person who can't help you. And then a lot of publicity material from my own and Graham's sort of press that talks about how healing is working within the NHS and how you can take that to your interview and show them, you know, case histories from the Centre of Excellence, which is UCLH. But that is now redundant, of course, as we're doing the Healing in Hospitals workshop, which is taking it one step further and showing them actually how to adapt their therapy and a whole lot more.
Yeah. You talked about preparation time for practitioners. How do you see preparation time?
Preparation time should really be volunteering. You know, it is about volunteering on a practical level. So that if you are interested in working in a hospital, go and volunteer at a hospital. It doesn't have to be in cancer services. They're unlikely to take you anyway because of the risk management issues around it. But you will be able to work on very seriously ill people. You certainly can in our trust. And you'll get a feel for whether you can work on an open ward, whether you can work in an atmosphere that isn't actually very supportive to you. Because, you know, we've learnt to cope, but you need support mechanisms around that. You need a good strong base in yourself. So your professional development for yourself is, do you have a lack of self-esteem? If so, this is going to really show that. Mm. Do you have a fear of rejection? If so, this is really going to challenge you. So work on your own personal issues with self-development workshops and tools so that you become a grounded, centered person that, yes, you're still going to get knocked. Believe you me, I've had many knocks over the years. people will be very unpleasant to you. Sometimes, you know, born-again Christians within our hospital wards will say that you're doing the devil's work. So a lot of work on yourself, on your own personal development, and then on a practical sense, volunteer somewhere or go and work in an area where you are going to be working with very sick people, as opposed to people that are well and coming to you for preventative medicine or for a different kind of problem.
Thank you. Is there anything that you'd like to say further about what you're doing or what's happened to you?
I don't think so. I think that I would like to say, really, do not be disencouraged by the fact that we have protocols and policies. This is not there to inhibit your practice. It's there to protect you and the patients. You know, be inspired that there are people working. I know there's a lot of volunteers working within hospitals and so on, but if you want to work in a professional way, that there are people out there doing that already, and that, you know, there are examples that you can take with you from that. And, you know, I recently attended a conference that talked about how people were going to, this is one of the myths that's going on at the moment, that people had to be degree students or hold an MSc in complementary therapy before they would be allowed to work in the NHS. This is absolute rubbish, you know, but these myths come out of nowhere, and people make them truths when they're not truths. I'm working within an NHS. I have no AMP certificate, that's anatomy and physiology. Nobody has ever asked me, actually, for any certificates. And actually, when we had these 80 applicants for people coming into the post, the people who were degree students and MSc students didn't have any practical experience of their therapy. They were just holding a degree. And so don't be disencouraged by all of that myths that go on around it. Just be the best healer you can be. Be an experienced healer, and then you will do well.
Angie, you truly are a pioneer, I think. It's an honour to have interviewed you today. Thank you for leading the way and bringing me to medical.
Well, thank you for allowing me to set the soapbox. That was so good.